Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Okta on Federal News Network.
The Education Department has been on a steady information technology modernization drive. It wants to improve stewardship of its large loan portfolio and to offer better service to constituents. Identity and access management are crucial to these efforts. And for an update, I spoke with Education's Chief Information Security Officer, Steve Hernandez.
Identity management, I think, has never been more front and center today than anywhere in history. And a lot of that revolves around, one, the pandemic situation we're in. It's dramatically changed the way that we do a lot of the ID processes. But two, as we drive towards more modern architectures, zero trust architecture being one, the power and the criticality of identity, it just grows exponentially. And for us, when we look at identity, you know, we look at the standard stuff. We look at, you know, oh, I've got a user on the network, or maybe I have a student logging into the FAFSA platform. But back in, you know, 2017 and 2019, OMB looked at this, and they coined a term in one of their memos around non-person entities. And this is where we start to think about identity, not just in terms of the human, but also in terms of things like services, in terms of like robots and robotic process automation, and even virtual workers that act and function much like a human worker would, but it's a machine. Yet, nonetheless, it needs an identity, because without identity, you know, there's a reason it's always in the front of the alphabet soup, whether it's ICAM, IAM, et cetera. Without identity, none of the rest matters. And I think that as we continue to bring on additional services through different cloud providers, as we get to additional mission spaces, that space is going to continue to evolve and grow for us. And I think many departments and agencies have a pedigree of, well, things like Active Directory, that's my source of identity. And in some cases, that may very well be true. That may be the level that they're at. But as we go forward, we have to get comfortable with the idea that the identity system becomes decoupled with the authentication layer, kind of the next layer, and that it actually becomes federated with a multitude of different approaches for authentication. So I think through the zero trust strategy and where we're headed in the federal space, identity is going to continue to be a core conversation, and that space is going to evolve rapidly. And I think that a lot of people thinking about identity is going to evolve in the near term.
And so when you have identities that are non-persons along with identities that are persons, and I guess a non-person could even be coming from within the agency, there could be an agent doing statistical gathering and that kind of thing, you obviously, I would think, need to have different strategies and different specific technologies for people to be able to log in versus a non-person to be able to identify itself.
Yeah, you're spot on there, Tom. It's one of these things where it's like, you know, a human being, we can say, well, here's a PIV or here's a strong authenticator token, and you're going to use that as part of your login process. With a non-person entity, we have to really get into the guts of things like X509 certificates and certificate-based assertions, typically combined with some other assertions around identity, like, I understand you're a digital worker or a virtual worker coming in. What platform are you coming from? What amount of hardware interrogation or device interrogation can I get as part of that assertion? And then how do I start to factor that into the authentication? For a lot of the Fed Civ space, this is new territory. And I think that as we go forward, understanding the technologies, how they plug in, and then also making sure that from, say, an anti-fraud perspective or other perspectives, that they can't be abused. You know, just because a bot has access to a certain amount of data, especially if it's public facing or interfacing with our civilian population, that it's not able to be more or less tricked into giving out information that it shouldn't. So I think it opens up an incredibly interesting world, especially in terms of authentication. But then kind of in line with the zero trust thoughts, we have to continuously authenticate that relationship to make sure that everything is operating as we expect it to. And when it deviates, start shrinking the aperture of access and maybe even then get a human involved to see what's going on the line.
And do you distinguish between continuous authentication and zero trust? Is one component of the other?
Yeah, you're spot on, Tom. Continuous authentication is part of a zero trust architecture. And so whether it's a machine identity or a human identity, one of the tenets of Zero Trust is that we're constantly evaluating that relationship between the subject and the object. Traditionally, that involves either the identity and data. That's the most common and probably the biggest use case. But it can be other things as well, like why is this identity snooping around on this particular segment of the network where they haven't been in a while? That could be something that causes an alarm and says, that's not good. Let's take a closer look at who or what this thing actually is.
And is one of the implications also that a bot or a non-person entity could, even though it's a piece of automated software basically, be taken over in some way by someone that shouldn't take it over and then give it behaviors and permissions that the organization didn't intend it to have?
Yeah, and you know what's fascinating is we're seeing that in terms of the threatscape and threat modeling, that's become a front and center conversation. And you know, the NSA, in coordination with a few of the other intelligence folks back, I believe it was in March last year, they put out this paper talking about GRU deploying some very sophisticated botnets, leveraging Kubernetes, leveraging state-of-the-art cloud capability, and frankly, leveraging captured data from the dark web to attack platforms around the world. And when we see our attackers leveraging this type of capability, orchestration, automation, robotic process automation, it's terrifying because, to your point, if they can get a foothold inside the organization and then get a hold of our own bots and turn them against us, that would be catastrophic for those who have that type of capability deployed. Most of the folks who are a little more forward-thinking in this space are basically treating every bot or every virtual worker, as it were, almost as its own authorization case. And so I know USDA has done some great work in this space, some other departments and agencies as well, but when they have effectively an identity that's a bot that they're going to turn loose, it goes through a full assessment process and has to be authorized by the authorizing official to say, you know, we understand the security around it, we understand what the bot could potentially get access to. We understand the boundaries and we understand the monitoring. So we know kind of where the thresholds are if things go south. And most importantly, we understand how to deny that authorization. We know how to pull the plug and stop something or sever it and contain it if we need to.
Steve Hernandez, Chief Information Security Officer and Director of Information Assurance Services at the Education Department. We'll return with more of this interview after a short break. I'm Tom Temin.
President Biden's executive order on cybersecurity is a solid step toward creating a resilient cyber infrastructure for our nation. Okta and AWS can help agencies meet the cybersecurity executive mandates with a Zero Trust architecture that aligns to FedRAMP, NIST, and other standards. Together, Okta and AWS provide a vendor-neutral approach that enables MFA and identity management across endpoints, workflows, and supply chains. Learn more at okta.com/federal. That's okta.com/federal.
Welcome back to our interview with Steve Hernandez, Chief Information Security Officer and Director of Information Assurance Services at the Education Department. Our topic is identity and access management. Let's talk about ID and access management in the cloud, because that adds a third dimension or maybe a fourth dimension to topologies and to architectures, and that's changed the pictures, I guess. How does it look from your standpoint?
It's going to be huge. I know we've discussed in my department, we're basically 100% cloud. We have, you know, 39 of the major cloud providers represented in our environment and several dozen other smaller boutique ones. And at the end of the day, our goal, in accordance with the OMB directives around Zero Trust architecture, and frankly just sound ICAM, is we want to get to a point of where we have a single identity that represents a human, virtual worker, a bot, whatever case it is, and then that single identity is federated across all these different cloud environments. And it's really, it's in some ways a data problem, but it's more so a coordination and a integration challenge. The good news is we have excellent identity integration frameworks that are typically associated with authentication. We have FIDO, we have web authentication, we have OpenAuth. We have a lot of great ways that we can start to federate and use that identity information. big part is, can we integrate across all those platforms? The great answer is, thus far, the answer seems to be absolutely yes. I think the other important part, though, is, can we get telemetry back from those interactions? And I think that that's really, it's not all there yet for all providers. And so knowing, you know, I have identities that are being used in cloud provider X, that same identity is being used in Y. And interestingly enough, I see odd behavior in both places. Do I have the visibility to see what's happening with that unique identity? And that's really the goal of where we need to get to. Cloud can really help us in there because pretty much every cloud provider we've seen can accept outside federation with outside identities. And I think that the bigger part of it is going to be, as we go forward and we think about additional steps like single sign-on, I authenticate once using a very strong authenticator, and then that identity can be propagated to any authorized service. I think that the silver lining in it is we're going to be able to provide an amazing user experience where, hey, I authenticated once, I had to remember one PIN with my PIV, for example, but then I got access to all 39 environments that I have rights to go to, and security operations is watching that behavior in the back.
So you need good cloud interoperability then to have all this happen.
Absolutely. And I think part of that is in picking an identity platform and picking an identity service, you have to look at that extensibility. Is it a one-trick pony or a few-trick pony when it comes to their ability to integrate with other cloud environments, or are they very robust? They support, you know, the big six plus a few more of the identity schemes and hopefully the authentication schemes that come with it.
Yeah, so if you use a cloud-based service, and typically the vendors of these ID and access management services are associated with a particular cloud that they are hosted in, then that's an important question for the agency to ask. Well, I also have assets in cloud X, Y, and Z. Can you get me there through your platform?
Yeah, that's a great takeaway, Tom, because every cloud provider has their own native identity system, and it's easy to get, I won't say trap, but it's easy to get pulled into the idea of, oh, you know, maybe I can use this identity elsewhere. Bit of a red herring there, because oftentimes that answer is no, or with a very limited set. At least from our experience, what we found is for identity, you really need to pick a player that is focused on identity management and then can integrate with a lot of these other cloud providers.
And what about identity proofing? How does that come into play here? Proofing, that is, for example,
yeah,
with third-party data.
Whew, yeah, that's a big one. You know, when we look at 863 and the requirements around identity proofing, you know, up to level two, you can do that remotely. And I think that during the pandemic, we've had quite a bit of experience in pushing that envelope almost as far as it can go. I think one of the real challenges with identity proofing that we have today and we'll continue to have is really around this idea that for level three, the highest level of proofing around identity, it's in person. You got to have that in-person verification of identity, and you know, rightfully so. That it doesn't get much better than that when it comes to proofing a person. The industry's come up with some really creative ways around, you know, what color was your car that you owned in 1996? And some of these interesting questions that are often culled from a lot of our credit history. And where we found those useful is certainly in that level two, but we've also found that very effective when we're looking at risk-based authentication. Someone comes up and, you know, maybe it looks like bot activity, we're not sure. Being able to leverage those questions as part of kind of real-time identity proofing with the authentication process, we've seen value there. Looking at level three, you know, there's been some early work with the Post Office and U.S. Access, GSA, to stand up basically U.S. Access stations in the Metro D.C. area. And so far, as near as I can tell, that model is working great. And I think as we look across the nation as to how can we have that level three identity proofing, I think models like what's happening with the Post Office may be a viable approach. I think that, you know, will we ever get to a virtual level three proofing? It's going to be pretty hard. I don't think we're there yet, but maybe in 10 years, we'll see what happens.
Because a big question is, how do you onboard people that can't come in? or how do you say enroll people in public-facing programs? Can that all be done online with the type of assurance that you need to prevent fraud and make sure the program has integrity?
Yeah, and that's a big area. When we're looking at a nationwide workforce, or in some case even a global workforce, it's a real deal. And COVID's only pushed that because, you know, if we're not in a situation where we can negotiate 100% telework or remote work and then, you know, still get folks a strong authenticator, that can be a deal breaker. We've lost some top candidates because, you know, remote work wasn't in the mix sometimes, depending on the position. And sometimes it's just, hey, sorry, I need you to be by a skiff, and our skiffs are in Washington, D.C. But they had other offers, and they were able to say, well, you know what, thanks, but no thanks, on to other things. I could easily see identity proofing and the ability to get proofed, especially for the more sensitive positions where we need that level three. That could be challenging. I think that U.S. access through a shared service model is a great start. There are a couple hundred locations throughout the nation, and they're getting more adapted to working in this COVID environment. But I would be very excited if the industry could come up with some fancy ways or even a standard by which, you know, commercial entities in particular could offer that proofing. So we could say, you know, go to the package store where you drop off, and then while you're there, you know, get an X-compliant type of identity proofing done while you're there. I think that would be a real cool future.
Steve Hernandez, Chief Information Security Officer and Director of Information Assurance Services at the Education Department. We'll return with the third and final segment of the interview after the short break. I'm Tom Temin.
President Biden's executive order on cybersecurity is a solid step toward creating a resilient cyber infrastructure for our nation. Okta and AWS can help agencies meet the cybersecurity executive mandates with a zero trust architecture that aligns to FedRAMP, NIST, and other standards. Together, Okta and AWS provide a vendor-neutral approach that enables MFA and identity management across endpoints, workflows, and supply chains. Learn more at okta.com/federal. That's okta.com/federal.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of our interview with Steve Hernandez, Chief Information Security Officer and Director of Information Assurance Services at the Education Department. We've been discussing identity and access management. If you would, just give us a quick survey of the education critical systems that face outward and maybe those that also face inward as mission critical for employees. And what are your general strategies for ID and access management?
Yeah, so, you know, the big ones for us at the department are obviously those related to federal student aid. We service, you know, typically about a third of the nation in some way or another through our federal student aid programs, whether it's getting aid, maintaining aid, closing out aid, whatever the case may be. And, you know, in that situation, it's always a partnership with our 6,000 institutions of higher education. And in that particular case, we share that responsibility. We share the responsibility of identity proofing. We do a good chunk of it, and also through our partners with Social Security in that space. But then also, you know, when they come in and sign the promissory note, there's also identity proofing that continues in that aspect. And so, you know, as we go forward, though, we're thinking about, well, you know, how does that evolve over time? And, you know, our in-person proofing is going to be necessary. I know I refinanced my mortgage, and on the final one, yes, it did have to be in person. I had to sign it with a witness there, but everything up to that point was all done. All the proofing was done digitally, and I think that in our own processes, we might be able to take a similar approach. When we look internal, a lot of our core systems that are vitally important to us are certainly in the cybersecurity space, my own systems, but then also systems related to running the financial operations of the department, and also our policy systems that we use to think about how we mold and shape the educational sector. And with those systems, we pretty much toe the line with PIV and that level three type of identity proofing. Most of the folks engaged in that space are in the DC area, or at least we can get them to an identity proofing location. But as we go forward there, we continue to feel that same demand pull of, can we be more flexible in how we're deploying this? Internally, some of those systems that are critical to us are also shared services. So we're looking at our partner agencies in saying, you know, can you federate and ingest identity information from us? Are there opportunities for us to then actually potentially even share identity proofing validations with each other so we're not having to redo it time and time again when folks move around? So lots of opportunity in the space, and I think that as we continue to evolve and work COVID, we're only going to get more creative.
And what is the source of truth for your systems, especially the internal systems? Is it Active Directory, like so many organizations? Is that a good platform on which to base contemporary ID and access management? And if so, can that happen in the cloud?
I think the best way to look at Active Directory is more of authentication. And I think that when we shift to that, we'll be in good shape. And Active Directory's perspective in particular, I think even Microsoft has recognized that it can fill in for identity and kind of hold that role, but Microsoft has its own identity management suite that works arm in arm with AD to basically fulfill a robust capabilities of identity management. For us at the department, Active Directory is certainly a critical piece of the identity. However, we also have other systems. For example, we have our ICAM platform at the department level that frankly is the authoritative source of identity for the department. It's linked arm in arm with Active Directory. They're conjoined. But when it comes to, okay, if I want the end-all be-all identity, where does it come from? It's actually the ICAM platform. And then only if necessary, we revert back to AD as a secondary, but not as assured source of identity for us.
And I want to get back to the zero trust question, because that's the newest hot button for so many agencies. And this is something the administration is pushing agencies to do. Then how does zero trust then link up with identity and access management?
Oh, boy, they are part and parcel. It's four leaves on the same clover in some ways. Basically, what we're looking at in the identity space is a big push towards that centralization and one source of truth for identity. We see that in the public draft of the Zero Trust strategy that was put out. There's a huge push to ensure that at a enterprise centralized level, we have that unified source of truth, and that any system that can consume single sign-on, leveraging that department, typically an ICAM solution for access control, any system that can consume it is consuming it. And the reason being is part of zero trust is being able to correlate activity across a multitude of systems, all your systems, to make sense of if an attacker got a hold of an identity, where are they trying to use it and how are they trying to use it? And more importantly, how does that identity behavior differ from what we would normally expect? And that's typically how we can catch something off. But if we have a bunch of silos, different identity systems, different access control systems being used, it becomes harder to pull that data together, normalize it, and make sense out of it. So I think from the zero trust perspective, we're already seeing a big push in there. I think as we look further down the line in zero trust, we're going to see how are we using deep learning, machine learning, AI, robotic process automation to also look at those actions the identity is performing and then make sense of it in terms of whether we continue to maintain access or start to restrict it.
Steve Hernandez, Chief Information Security Officer and Director of Information Assurance Services at the Education Department. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Okta on Federal News Network.
When we need help, we turn to government. When government needs help, they turn to Federal News Network. Federal News Network, helping feds meet their mission.